There's an outline of what I want to talk about today, and I've divided it into two broad sections. The first is opportunities for immediate action, and then longer-term structural issues. The first thing I'm going to talk about is a wage tax trade-off. Then I'm going to speak briefly on the small things that can be done, and then going to speak briefly again on green taxes, personal tax priorities, and corporate tax priorities. Now, those two topics correspond broadly to the two discussion papers that we produced for CEDA that were mentioned by David earlier on. The theme, and a sort of overarching theme of what I'm talking about today, is that tax is about choices. And a great deal of tax discussion tends to rather over, I guess in the normal simplification that occurs in politics, tends to miss that. The long, clean lines of policy, the idea of simplicity is obviously valuable, but tax policy is about getting those feathers with the minimum of hissing. It always involves, the reference is to plucking the goose and minimising the hissing, and it always involves trying to minimise the amount of damage that you're doing. So we see lots of arguments for the alignment of company tax, and of course I'd like to see the company tax and the top personal rate aligned. It's a question of whether I would like to see that more than I would like to see some other things. And in my case, I'd like to see some other things, and I'll give you some arguments for that later. Again, dividend imputation is a nice thing. We can see why it exists. The question is, what do we pay for it? And it seems to me we're paying a lot for it. And so that's the theme, that we have to choose the lesser of two evils. The immediate context is that the government is fighting inflation, that it already has its hands tied. It's done it itself. It's tied its own hands on the question of its tax reform or tax cutting priorities for the next 3 years. So in that context, we should be trying to broaden the base of our anti-inflation efforts. And I've argued that we should use savings policy, that we should be doing everything we can to get as much money as we can in the short term into super for short-term inflationary reasons. And I would also argue that we should pursue a wage tax trade-off. That's a diagram of minimum wages in 2004. And as you can see, relative to full-time median earnings, we have a very high minimum wage. This is what's happened to minimum wages under the Fair Pay Commission. They've gone up a little over the last 3 years and have basically been indexed since 2006. And over a longer period of time, since 1997, they've gone up by nearly 10% real. And these other series are other parts of the award system which have gradually been received less support from the award system. A wage tax trade-off of the particular kind that I'm talking about is a minimum wage, trying to reduce real minimum wages, was proposed in 1999 by the five economists. In return for tax credits that would compensate most families for the loss of their real wage, there would be a wage freeze or a minimum wage freeze. It was rejected by the government. And it wasn't clear to me at the time entirely why it was rejected. So in this situation, we've actually been spending billions of dollars cutting taxes pretty much every year for about 4 years, and we're planning to go on and continue to do that for the next 3 years. And in addition, we have pumped a lot of money through a tax credit called the Low Income Tax Offset at minimum wage earners. And those are the things that we've done in the most recent past. And that's been the impact, again, just since 2005, That's been the impact on families. A couple with no children have done best, then a couple with two children, single, and so you can see that people that real disposable incomes have gone up by a very substantial amount. Foreshadowed changes are very similar. We're taking the LITA, the low income tax offset, from where it was in some time ago to $1,500, taking the tax-free threshold effectively for low-income earners to $16,000. It's pretty impressive. And then we've got some effect on, by lifting the threshold, we get some effect at low-income levels as well. And those rolling tax cuts, I would argue, create the circumstances for a wage tax trade-off, by which I mean that the Fair Pay Commission will be well disposed towards these kinds of arguments and towards arguing that limits, that increases to the federal minimum wage might be limited in the light of those things. And there's also been quite a lot of progress on issues like incentives to work at the bottom end for these because of these kinds of initiatives. And here are some here's some graphs from the Fair Pay Commission, and that's replacement rates, which have fallen, increasing work incentives. And one of the things that's really, well, it's probably better to show you in the next diagram. This is the financial gain from taking up a full-time job, from moving from welfare to work. And as you can see, it's gone up very substantially. But one of the things that's quite striking here is how little the increases in wages that were given improve the incentive to work for these groups, because these groups are facing high, we're lowering them, but these groups are facing high marginal tax rates. If you want to get returns to these people, we've done it more effectively through the tax changes that we've made than is likely to occur through minimum wages, through changes to minimum wages. Interesting question was the reason that if this wasn't tried in 1999, that it was too expensive? Well, perhaps, but that was 1999. Why the government, the previous government, didn't return to this when the money turned up, I'm not too sure. But you can see the difference. It was costing about, the proposal in 1999 would have cost about $6 billion, and this one costs $30 billion. And I wonder what might have happened if work choices itself had been sold as a wage tax trade-off. All that had to happen was that the Prime Minister escaped from the Orwellian straitjacket, the Orwellian rhetorical straitjacket that he was in, that chains were falling off people and that everything was terrific and there were really no downsides, to saying the sort of thing that Bob Hawke said in 1983, which is that we're asking for some degree of shared sacrifice and that we're providing trade-offs for some sacrifices in the labour market. So that's the end of my that's the end of that subject, and I'm happy to we can talk about that later. The next point I'll make is a pretty quick one, which is that tax is a complex adaptive system. We should start managing it like one, with as much attention to small as large things. So when a government is saying to its bureaucrats, we need revenue here, we need to plug holes in revenue, there will be a large number of large things that walk on. They'll be able to save $1 billion or more from removing the tax concession for fleet vehicles, for instance. Lots of quite big items. But let me tell you a quick story from my time in John Dawkins' office, which is that we received a letter from some solicitors in Brisbane, and they said that they'd been doing bankruptcies, and they wrote to the Treasurer and they said, we have found a section of the Tax Act that isn't working the way it should and is being used by people who are liquidating companies to avoid tax obligations. We think we should close it up. So rather than what I often did, which was to write a note on it and say, look, please keep me in the loop on your response to this, I photocopied it and I simply sent it off to the Treasury. And in the spirit of an audit, 9 months later when I left, I got the photocopy out and I rang the person who had written the letter and I said, what happened? And he said, well, we got a letter back from John Hewson and we got a letter back from Tim Fisher, but we didn't get any letter back from the tax office or the treasurer or anyone. So that's quite unusual, I might say. I'm not suggesting that's happening all the time. There are obviously systems in place that mean that that shouldn't happen, and generally it doesn't. But there is an enormous amount that we could do if we were thinking about this system in the way that, say, Toyota thinks about its factory system. If we were trying to find ways of getting feedback through from the coalface up to the top to get the thing ticking away. One example, a tiny example, and I run into these things all the time, is that artwork is depreciable at 1.5%. Now, it may be that that's one of the many things that is going before the treasurer.